On the Block, On Demand.
This is On the Block with Brent Axe.
And, you know, I told Smitty after the game, I said, you're the only player that I know that missed a whole half because of your finger. Just kidding. But they couldn't get it to, it was dislocated and they couldn't get it back in. And if they'd have got it back in, he would have been fine. And he actually wanted to go in and play, and we just didn't allow him to. But he's a great competitor. I heard somebody say he set some kind of record in the first half of the game. Heavens knows what he'd have done if he'd have played the whole game. But, you know, you're talking about the ultimate warrior and the ultimate competitor. And, you know, I'm so happy for him that he was best player in college football, because I don't think anybody's done more for their team than he has for our team.
That's Nick Saban, of course, head coach, Alabama, six-time national champion now, as we bring it back here on the Block, ESPN Radio and twitch.tv/QSportsTalk. Devontae Smith. I recall one Seth Goldberg looking at me funny when I informed him, don't tell the Heisman people. But I told Seth, who I was voting for Heisman Trophy, this was actually when I was considering who I was going to vote for the Heisman, and he kind of looked at me like I had lobsters crawling out of my ears. And I said, you watch, he's going to win this thing. And oh, by the way, he's going to be a top five pick in the NFL draft. Okay, I didn't add that at the time. I'm adding it now. But yeah, I'm kind of Devontae Smith twice a year with either the Jets or the Dolphins. That could be an issue. Trey White against Devontae Smith. That will be an interesting matchup when he gets picked. It looks like he's going to be a top three pick. One of my favorite stats from last night. At halftime, Devontae Smith had 215 yards. Ohio State as a team had 191 yards. So you saw an all-timer performance there, a player that is, you know, even with the injury, fingers will heal. Going to be a top three pick in the draft. Should be a top three pick in the draft. If you're the Jets, do you say, is it the quarterback? We keep the quarterback. He needs a weapon. Or do you go the other way and pick a quarterback? If you're Miami, you will run to the podium and select Devontae Smith. Put him back together. Remember in the national championship game a couple years back when Smith was kind of introduced to everybody in the world with that amazing touchdown pass that got Alabama back on track against Clemson. A nice reunion, especially if you're Miami, committing to Tua is present there. This Alabama team was historic. And I think Paul Feinbaum said it best on Get Up this morning when asked a straight-up question from Mike Greenberg if this was the best of Nick Saban's championship teams.
Was this the best of Saban's championship teams?
Easily. Just the offense alone answers the prize. I mean, he's had better defenses. That goes without saying. He's had some of the greatest defenses in college football history. But this offense is unparalleled. And just, you know, what we saw in the first half last night with Devontae Smith. But to follow up with what Reese said a minute ago, Greeny, I think what's going to make this more special for Nick Saban and for college football is the struggle to get here. Countless times, as you said, we talked about whether we'd ever get to the first game, let alone the last game. And even a lot of people who thought we'd get to the first game never dreamed we'd get to Monday night. So this is one of the most remarkable stories I have ever seen in the history of college football.
That's the great Paul Feinbaum on Get Up this morning describing this Alabama team. And what Alabama is doing, not that they hadn't to this point, but I thought momentum had picked up for eight teams in the college football playoff, given the mess that the college football playoff rankings and the system became. And I guess with COVID and the way that the season was presented. And by the way, side note, the fact that we made it here, that they played a college football season, it wasn't without wrinkles. It wasn't without bumps in the road. It wasn't without plenty of COVID pauses and anticipated issues. But they made it. The sacrifice those players had to make, and just the fact that we're sitting here talking about a college football national championship game based on some of the conversations we were having through the summer. And then there was the whole breakaway. And credit to Greg Sankey and the SEC. They never wavered. They said, we're going to find a way to play. At least we're going to try to play. We're not going to run from this. And look, I'm not going to be too hard on the Big Ten and the Pac-12. Because a lot of people were scared, didn't know, didn't want to put people at risk. We were hearing so much about myocarditis and, you know, just lawsuits piling up everywhere if these student athletes got themselves into a COVID situation and God forbid their health was compromised. These are serious issues. So I'm not going to scold the Big Ten and the Pac-12 for that, but the SEC never wavered. And when the Big Ten flexed, at least it thought it was flexing, it said, we will cancel in the name of safety, and the Pac-12 always does what the Big Ten does. But the SEC, the ACC, and the Big 12 were like, no, we're going to give this a shot. Or at the very least, we're going to kick this can down the road as far as we can. They made the decision to go. Again, it wasn't without complications. Yes, Syracuse went 1-10, but they played 11 football games. You know, you had a team in the national championship game last night that had only played 8 games. It was making up rules literally as it went along in order to keep playing and getting into national championship games and Big Ten championship games. But I think we all kind of made it up as we went along last year. So congratulations to college football for making it to that game last night. Again, not without its complications and bumps in the road, but they made it. It was not the outright disaster that a number of Corona bros said it was going to be. I say that sarcastically, by the way. Okay. But going back to the point I made a moment ago, I'm willing to admit when an argument that I make a lot is kind of falling apart. I have advocated for an 8-team playoff. I think it makes sense to have the 5 conference champions from the Power 5 and 3 open spots. That way, when a Coastal Carolina comes along, a Central Florida comes along, a Boise State comes along, at least there's a spot for them. Let's settle this on the field. It's more money for the networks. It's more money for the sport. It's an extra week of football. You can do this. All the roadblocks they've thrown in front of this are absurd. They can do it. I think eventually they probably will do it. Now, the counter argument to it is, well, the way college football is structured, just look at the list of, you know what, I'll pull it up while we're yakking about it here, okay? Just to give some perspective on this, but it's not going to surprise anybody what we're discussing. But it's just a case of the rich get richer, right? It's just a case of, let's just look at the last decade. Bama, LSU, Clemson, Bama, Clemson, Bama, Ohio State, Florida State. Remember when Florida State was a dominant program? Bama, Bama, Auburn. If you want me to go further back than that, 2009, Bama, Florida, LSU, Florida, Tim Tebow years, Texas. Texas is going to hope that Steve Sarkisian can turn them back into a national power. But Vince Young, Texas, 2005, USC the year before that. LSU and USC split the championship because we're now back in the BCS era. 2003, Ohio State, Miami, Oklahoma. Like the last, I would say, non-blue blood championship. I think you got to go back to 1991. Washington slips in there with Miami, certainly a blue blood at the time. This is when the pollsters decided the national champion. 1990 was Colorado, Georgia Tech, 2 Power 5 programs that are nowhere near being national championship programs again. So there was a little blip on the radar then, but before that it's Miami, Notre Dame, Miami, Penn State, Oklahoma, BYU slipped in there with Steve Young in 84, and you can go through the list and you can look at it. So here we are in 2021. Going into next year, preseason polls coming out, and you can write it before you even have to think about it. Who are the top teams next year? Oh, let me guess. Bama, Clemson, Oklahoma, right? The list goes on and on. So does it matter if there was an 8-team playoff? It's not to say that one of these upstarts as an 8 seed could beat Bama as a 1. I just tend to maybe be too romantic to say, well, settle it on the field. Play it on the field. That's why we play the games. We don't hand people trophies. You want to crown them, you can crown their butt, right? As the great Denny Green once said, and he didn't say butt. But, man, you watch Alabama last night, and you see Mac Jones, who, if I'm a Pittsburgh Steelers fan, I hope Mac Jones is sitting there at 24 in this draft. And you see Najee Harris, who I'll play it now. I was going to save this for hot takes, but I'll play it now. Had one of the best press conference responses I've ever heard. This was great.
Najee, Ohio State has a really good front. How are you able to expose those holes so effortlessly?
Effortlessly? You didn't see what they were doing? It was blowing my ass up. What are you talking about? It wasn't effortlessly. I'll tell you what. Them do, they did their thing, bro, to be honest with you. It was just, you know, they what they did is every time we did a play action, they just shot the gaps. Shot the gaps. The linebackers, and we got a couple of them to play a lot of the fakes. That's why we were able to throw so much bubbles and the slants and all that. But, bro, them, they was blowing my ass up. Are you tripping?
Yeah. What kind of question was that? Najee Harris withstood the hits amazingly. But they were blowing his ass up last night. Effortlessly. Anyway. And, of course, Devontae Smith did his thing. So let's dissolve this into, all right, well, what can Syracuse take away from this? Well, here's what Tommy DeVito tweeted last night. And first he tweets, the play calling is ... unreal. And, of course, he was talking about Alabama. Now, not everybody has Devontae Smith. But the concepts that Bama showed last night, the way that Smith was going back and forth in motion, you know, the safety that had to spy him just, you know, couldn't keep up. The fact that Devontae Smith got as open as he did last night, it's not like Ohio State got on the field last night, like, who the hell is that guy? They just couldn't cover him, and partially couldn't cover him because of the creative schemes that Saban and Sarkisian put out there. So then DeVito, a few minutes later, kind of quote tweets himself and says, the concepts are so many options, dealer's choice. Tommy DeVito liked what he saw out there. I didn't check Garrett Schrader's Twitter feed because, remember, we got a true quarterback competition coming into spring ball if and when they play spring ball. Because remember, the spring semester has been delayed to start to February 8th at Syracuse, but I think they're on track to have spring ball. I have made no bones about the fact that I am not impressed with Sterling Gilbert. I'm not impressed with his schemes. I'm not impressed with his offensive philosophy, and I understand that by extension, that's Dino Babers. So I don't know, and Dino Babers would be quick to remind you in his own unique Dino way that he's the offensive coordinator. But you watch that motion, you watch some of those schemes, and it's hard not to think like Tommy DeVito. It's hard not to think as a Syracuse fan, well, why don't they do more of that? Where is the pre-snap motion? Where are some of these things? Because this team does have good receivers. Now, Nykeem Johnson's moved on, but you had Nykeem Johnson last year. You had Taj Harris last year. Don't get me going on the tight end thing. As you know, I'm very passionate about the lack of throws to the tight end last season or the usage of the tight end in the passing game. I think that's the biggest frustration amongst many that a Syracuse fan comes away from last year. You never got the feeling that you're just empty in the tank. We're coming at you. I think a little bit at the end of the year we saw that aggression. And remember, that team was decimated by injury, offensive line-wise, down to your fifth running back, who turned out to be a star, and Sean Tucker. That's fair to bring up. But it doesn't mean you can't be aggressive. It doesn't mean you can't utilize the talent you have. Sterling Gilbert tried to wedge that team into what he does. The proverbial trying to put the square peg in the round hole. He didn't look at that team and adjust accordingly. And to that effect, neither did Dino. And again, to be fair, with the inconsistencies with the offense and the offensive line, and maybe they couldn't be as aggressive as they wanted to, but that was my big takeaway too. And then DeVito's tweeting it, and I'm like, well, there you go. This is the time when you get better in college football. The whole college football world's watching last night, and they're saying, well, and it's a copycat world. It's a copycat sport, and they're saying, well, can we do some of what they're doing? Even with, yeah, you don't have first-round talent. You don't have, you know, an offensive coordinator that's going to walk out the door and go coach Texas, but you can do some of the things they're doing. Syracuse certainly can. And DeVito was watching, and he noticed. I'll check Garrett Schrader's Twitter feed during the break. I'm not sure he was tweeting the same thing, but that's what's always on my mind. It's the same thing. Like, that's why I'm so hopeful the Bills make the Super Bowl this year. The first thought I have when the Super Bowl kicks off every year is, I can't wait till my team's back in this. And when I sit down and watch the national championship game every year, it just kind of hits me, like, how far away Syracuse is from this. How far away they are from, and by the way, 90% of college football is from being in that moment, because it's the same five teams that just kind of take turns winning it. Is that good for the sport? Well, we're going to kind of get into that a little bit more during Hot Takes, because through a crazy world and an inconsistent world, there's been something in sports that has been exactly what you expect it to be. We'll discuss that next. Stay right there. You're on the block. ESPN Radio and twitch.tv/QSportsTalk, presented by Burdick BMW.
This is On the Block with Brent Axe.
Mac Jones has not faced any pressure up to this point.
Well, faces some pressure there. Lost the football, and Ohio State takes it away. Baron Browning falls on it.
All-time announcer jinx right there. Of course, Ohio State went on to lose big to Alabama. I love when that happens. You know, Bob, this kicker has not missed in 75 straight attempts. Miss. You know, it's been about 90 attempts here since Joe Girard's missed a free throw. Clang. Herbie drops the edge. Mac Jones has not been under pressure here. And, well, Ohio State must have heard you. No, not a lot of people in the stadium. So we bring it back here on the block. ESPN Radio, twitch.tv/QSportsTalk. Let's do some hot takes, baby.
We've got a hot one for you.
Oh, you're hot.
Why, thank you. So are you. And I'm not afraid to cry. So hot.
So hot in here. Yes,
man, it's hot. How hot is it? It's so hot, I poured McDonald's coffee in my lap to cool off.
It's time for hot takes on the block.
So let's look at it this way. 2020 was 2020. 2021 has certainly had its issues so far, and hopefully things get turned around soon, particularly in about 8 days, beginning that process. But one thing that has been normal in this quest to get back to normal in life has been sports. And it continued last night with Alabama winning the national championship game. Alabama had the third best preseason title odds. Beat Ohio State, the preseason co-favorite. In the National Hockey League, the preseason favorite, and albeit the season got extended and had to go through the bubble and all that, but the favorite to win the Stanley Cup, the Tampa Bay Lightning. The Tampa Bay Lightning won the Stanley Cup, and here we are. The NHL season drops the puck tomorrow. Hooray! Hockey's back, baby. In the WNBA, the co-favorite was Breanna Stewart's Seattle Storm. They won the WNBA championship. In the NBA, the Lakers won. And again, the season was paused, extended, put through the bubble, crowned a champion in September. An odd time to do that, as we tell you at 444. If you've been hurt in a car, it's time to call William Matar. It's an easy number to remember, 444-4444. Lakers won the championship. They were number two preseason favorite. Now, I'm going by odds here. I'm going by odds because you can go by rankings and favorites, and people determine those certain ways. I'm going by odds here. Plus 450, Lakers were heavy favorites to win. Major League Baseball. The Dodgers won, albeit a shortened World Series, a 60-game season. But if it was 60, 80, 100, 120, 162, the Dodgers were favored to win the World Series. Plus 385, and if it wasn't them, it was the Yankees, right? It was a trade-off. But heavy favorite, hard to make money on it. They won the World Series. You go back to the Super Bowl, the preseason favorite Kansas City Chiefs finished with the league's best record, and they have the best odds to win this Super Bowl. So even through crazy times, even through inconsistency, the favorites keep winning here. So if you're looking for something to kind of center normal, sports has not only found a way through a pandemic and crazy times, sports is normal. The teams that are supposed to win are winning and winning consistently, and Alabama continued that last night.
That's hot.
Bill Belichick turned down the Presidential Medal of Freedom. There was a lot of discussion about that yesterday, about what he would do and how he would do it. And I think if Belichick, let's say, had retired, walk off after the last Patriots Super Bowl and was sitting out there and was not currently coaching, he may have accepted it. Belichick is a noted Trump supporter. Robert Kraft is a noted Trump supporter. Tom Brady no longer there, but he was in his time with the Patriots, and that's fine. That's their choice. But you could not accept this, for the way I look at it, for three reasons if you're Belichick. Number one, that's just way too hot to touch right now. And you know, pun intended, we're in hot takes.
That's hot.
Too hot to touch right now. You cannot go near that. You cannot have the optic of standing next to President Trump right now. Can't do it. It's just no way. No way. The Patriots, all these corporations, just look around right now. And you can have whatever opinion you want about that. People are fleeing from any sort of association with this White House. You cannot touch it. Number two is you lose the locker room. You will lose that locker room. He is Bill Belichick. He has a certain authority and an air to him that a number of coaches don't. But look, the Patriots are not the Patriots anymore. They didn't make the playoffs. They need some key free agents. They have to score in the draft. They've got to rebuild this thing. It's now Buffalo's division. Miami's the team that's right on their heels. And if they have a great draft, and I would anticipate they would, sitting there at the three spot and the number of choices they're going to have there, if they trade for Deshaun Watson, and that's a possibility, like, game on. It is now a division that will go back and forth between Buffalo and Miami. And once upon a time, that was the case with Dan Marino and Jim Kelly. And the Patriots are just kind of sitting there fighting for scraps. They had their run. They had one of the all-time great runs in the history of sports. And Belichick's trying to rebuild that. So as long as he's still there trying to do it, you will lose that locker room if you go accept that. The third thing is, what is the Presidential Medal of Freedom at this point? Right? I mean, it was an award that was started by John F. Kennedy. It's the highest civilian award in the country. But what has unfortunately been lost in this administration, and particularly currently, given the events of the last week or so, is, you know, that used to be an award that held weight. It was coming from an office. It wasn't coming from an individual. It was coming from the White House. It was coming from the presidency. There was weight to it. There was history to it. There was tradition to it, right? This wasn't about necessarily, it's always about the president, whoever is in the White House, right? And who's handing it out. And certainly there's been political affiliations for that. You go look at some of the Presidential Medals of Freedom that Barack Obama handed out. Some people are like, really? You're giving him a Presidential Medal of Freedom? So we can have that debate. But this became so much about a man and why he's handing it out for his better interest, as opposed to why that thing needs to be handed out and why it was created. For the better interest of the country. You want to give somebody the Presidential Medal of Freedom, and I apologize, I don't have the gentleman's name in front of me. Go find that police officer that single-handedly took on that mob that raided the Capitol. Give it to him. That's, you know, somebody who deserves an award. Bill Belichick's a football coach who's won plenty of awards, won plenty of Super Bowl rings. I don't know how Bill Belichick's made the country better by doing that. And Belichick's had a few cheating scandals, if you want to get into that discussion. But you want to give somebody a Presidential Medal of Freedom, the highest civilian award in the nation? Give it to that guy. Not a football coach, but good for Bill Belichick for saying, I appreciate it. Thanks, but no thanks. Can't do it right now. And on that note, we'll break. We'll come back. You're on the Block, ESPN Radio, and twitch.tv/QSportsTalk.
Thank you. Bye-bye.